to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thanks for listening to Sprouts.
Coming up next on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Actually, we are Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we're coming up next on Free Radio. And just to show you that I'm really in a hurry, I'm going to skip the musical introduction and go directly into the substance of the show because I have a number of guests coming. You're tuned to Free Radio or Freak Radio, 101.1 FM or freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening on the computer, call-in numbers here are 427-3772 or 469-3119. My name is Robert Norris. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. And I'm going to go directly now to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday. Not because there's any big emergency, actually. City Council actually covered its ass pretty well at that council meeting. I was talking about and writing about it and actually invited Councilmember Rotkin to come on Sunday, and his invitation is still open, and I think he still plans to be here at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. For all you Rotkin fans and Rotkin critics, talking about Mayor Ryan Coonerty's new rules that significantly cut back public comment and actually, as originally proposed and as enforced, 2 weeks ago, actually violated the state law by allowing the city council itself an opportunity to decide who would be able to speak on a subject and who would not, even though the state law and the Brown Act, as they call it, requires that everyone be allowed a certain period of time to speak. So let's go directly to a little bit of the Santa Cruz City Council. And actually, soon after that, we're going to be hearing from a longtime council critic and longtime community member, Ed Davidson, on the issue of public comment at City Council. What's it about? Who cares? Well, in a way, that's a very good question, because the process of getting anything on the City Council agenda actually requires that you have a council member attempt to put it on. And even then, as we've seen with the sleeping ban, when Ed Porter tried to put the sleeping ban on the agenda back in 2001, when he got into office in order to fulfill a campaign commitment, the very green mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice, wouldn't let him do it. And he tried once, and then he stopped trying. Actually, council members are supposed to be able to put items on the city council agenda if, and even if they don't get on immediately, and the mayor can choose to put some on one time and delay others. But as I understand it from the city clerk's office, he is or she is supposed to let those items eventually get on the agenda. So Porter didn't spend a lot of time trying to get the sleeping ban on the agenda, as I understand it. And I'd question him further, but he's been fearful of coming on my show for 8 years. 2 years into his term, he had me arrested for tape recording one of his meetings, openly tape recording his meeting. And, of course, it was a false arrest, and it was thrown out. But a lot of council members are very sensitive about going on the record. Coonerty is another one who has refused to come on the air. But Rotkin is not. You'll be able to speak to him. And what we're going to do now is hear some of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, where a number of us showed up to express our outrage and our concern that Mayor Coonerty's new rules essentially said, we, the council, will decide which items you can talk about on the agenda and which you can't. And they backpedaled furiously on that issue on this council meeting, which is good in a certain sense. But they also were able to cut back on all public comment time on the so-called consent agenda, which actually includes usually most items that come up at the Santa Cruz City Council. It's on a thing called the consent agenda, which means it's stuff the staff presents that everybody just votes for as one block without discussion unless a member of the public or a city council member pulls it up. Mayor Coonerty has eliminated the rule without any kind of a vote by either the public or the city council that says people have the option to pull off an item themselves. Looks like we have a caller calling in. Let's see who could be calling in this early, for heaven's sake. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Ed Davidson.
Hey, Ed, you're early.
Okay, well, I can go into a little bit of the reason for the not the oral communication, but the consent agenda plot.
Well, you know, you can talk about it if you like. I'm really wary of boring people about this issue, so try and, you know, make it as exciting as possible.
Okay. Well, I'm only going to add that the reason that they have a consent agenda is items that are not supposed to be controversial and wouldn't generate debate. And they've been particularly upset about yourself and myself, who have a tendency to pull items off the consent agenda in order that they be discussed, or that some point be raised that might warrant further analysis before it's approved.
People should understand that normally your big problem is getting an item on the city council agenda for discussion, but once it's on the agenda, and if an item goes on the consent agenda, it means that usually these are items not placed there by discussions with members of the city council that citizens or members of the community do, but they come from the staff. Essentially, the conservative or reactionary bureaucracy, that is my view, that often the police department will get matters on there, or Parks and Rec will suddenly give a huge appropriation for more policing of the homeless in the Poganip on the consent agenda. And what you want to do when that happens is you want to have that item taken off the consent agenda. That doesn't mean it doesn't get discussed. It means it does get discussed. Otherwise, if it stays on the consent agenda, there's no discussion but a simple up or down vote. Is that right, Ed?
You got it exactly. Now, the purpose of the consent agenda originally was just to take anything that's not controversial and isn't going to generate any discussion. The reason that you and I have pulled items off the consent agenda is because they are controversial, and they do require, I think, an on-the-record vote by the council that they have discussed and the issue and have made a decision on the record. Now, the problem with attempting to secure permission from council members before you're allowed to talk on a public hearing item.
Now, let's explain this. I mean, although actually it's going to be explained in this tape. In fact, I think what we want to do here is have this tape played, and you can listen to the tape, Ed, because you explain some of it on the tape, and so do I, and so does the council. I guess if you're welcome to...
I'll hang on and just listen.
Yeah, well, feel free to if you want to... to interject, do so, and we can stop the tape if we want to, you know, if you want to make some points. So here we go. I'm going to play a little bit of this tape. The city council. There's a bit of an introduction and interview beforehand, so it's not going to go directly into the city council, but we will shortly. So don't go away.
Okay.
People waiting outside here for the city council. Actually, the staff is being introduced inside. Shane, why are you here?
Well, because when I was on the street or living on RV, I was forced to not be allowed to sleep at night. So I got sleep deprived, and I had a terrible accident where I, you know, basically fell asleep while I had a big hot boiling, kettle of coffee on a hot, fire, and it came down right over my head, and it literally melted all my skin off. It was coming off in like webs. Like, they had to helicopter me over to the hospital because none of the hospitals in Santa Cruz County were able to deal with an emergency that bad, so they had to take me over to Santa Fe, where I spent three weeks in a burn unit, being, suffering great pain, being debrided and scraped down with my wounds every day, and having to be pumped full of fentanyl, which doesn't even do a darn thing to stop the pain. And it adds more pain because it's just more stimuli. It's going on. You got needles going in your arm. You don't want that stuff happening where you're burning. It was a lot of hell. And it was all because I was not allowed to go to sleep. I was too afraid to sleep at night.
And when you were living in your vehicle.
Right, an RV. And
this also a man with AIDS.
Right, I had full-blown AIDS, and that was not... Well, it almost made it to where I almost didn't survive. So, I almost died as a consequence to the sleeping, making this illegal sleep thing or whatever,
So you feel strongly about it?
Yeah, I feel very strongly about it.
You're going to be speaking at oral communications today?
I hope so. If I can stay for the duration, yeah, if I can have
it. Does. Well, it gets several hours at least before they'll allow the public to speak in the new Coonerty. Actually, this was done by Rodkin and Matthews before placing oral communications at the end of the afternoon agenda at a time uncertain. But Coonerty seemed to show initially that he wanted to allow people to speak at the beginning of the city council meeting, but now for some reason he's not allowing that 10-minute period to take place, but shoveling it all to the end, making it a half-hour period at the end, few are going to be speaking. So I guess he thinks he's saving time, figures he's saving time and money.
Create a bottleneck so no one gets to talk.
You wouldn't say that about our mayor, would you?
Absolutely. It's kind of obvious just from circumstantial looking at, just from the situation at hand, it's obvious.
Thank you.
Ed, you're still on the line? Ed, are you still there? Ed.
I'm here.
Yeah, you got to watch out. Don't listen to your radio. Listen to your phone line. This is an interesting comment, a reality, too, about the city council procedure. The one period of time when the public can actually talk about items that they want to talk about, rent control, police abuse, items the city council chooses not to put on its agenda, is what's called the oral communications period. Most people remember this as being from 7 to 7:30, half an hour, on the evening agenda. Coonerty has changed this to make it 10 minutes at the beginning of the afternoon agenda and 20 minutes at the beginning of the evening agenda. But then when he removes the evening agenda, as sometimes happens, he puts it all at the end of the afternoon agenda, which means that people don't know when they can talk. You have to sit through the entire council meeting. Any comments on that?
Well, I think just the typical inconvenience to the public. Their objective, I'm without doubt concerned that they don't give a damn what the public says and thinks. They are up there on their pedestals, and the less the public gets to talk, the happier they are. They do not want to hear any dissent. They don't want to hear anything other than their own uniform views, and that's certainly an arrogance that is against the public interest.
Hear, hear. Well, let's hear this next speaker, whose voice you'll recognize.
So we're talking with Ed Davidson. Ed, you're here on, of course, the consent agenda obscenities that are going on. But what else are you here for?
The public sculpture on Pacific Avenue. There's supposedly 10 sites where they're going to attempt 5 years public sculpture, and I don't know where they are and how they relate to the sitting, the anti-sitting ordinances. And would note that the little park that was called Chuck Abbott Park between the Octagon Building and the Cooper House has now lost all its benches, so it's really a plaza.
It's even mislaid.
Well, I would hope that they would be replaced if they had
hope springs eternal.
But again, there are no sitting anywhere, no stopping. It's not the user-friendly Pacific garden wall that we once knew and loved. It's become this concrete, barricaded, but it's well policed. Well, that's the whole point of it, and they're trying to basically appeal to the upscale boutique shopper, such as at the Vault. And
that's the kind of shopper we want in Santa Cruz, Ed.
And the people be damned. This is not a meeting place, a friendly place for people to gather and enjoy the delights of concrete barriers and planter boxes that you can't sit on and so on. There used to be a time when there were nice wooden planter boxes that people would gather and enjoy their little takeout outdoors, and it no longer is the case.
Yeah. Fashionable outdoor cafes taking up public space on sidewalks now that allow you the comfort of an espresso, a cappuccino, a double mocha latte.
Well, in the downtown recovery plan, those what are called extension areas were specifically required to take the barriers and the chairs indoors at night to leave the sidewalk clear, and they've been allowed to permanently implant those metal barriers.
Thank you, Ed.
Ed, are you there?
Still here.
So, Ed, you know, that's, you know, interesting commentary. You're remembering the pre-earthquake, pre-1989 days when there were brick planters up and down the mall, and the police would give tickets to homeless people and hippies for sitting on the brick planters, calling it misuse of public property, when in fact, of course, the waist-high planters were put in just for that reason. Now they continue to do that with even the little inch-high areas that are around the scrawny trees have been put in to replace the beautiful shrubbery that was torn out after the earthquake, and of course all the benches were removed, and a small number of benches were put back. You mentioned the plans providing that there should be no, permanent structures put in on the mall that would, you know, block the sidewalk, such as, for example, are there in front of New Leaf Market. Was this part of the plan changed, or is the city simply violating the general plan or whatever plan it was for the rebuilding?
They're reinterpreting the plan, but the intent clearly was that these extension areas were not to be permanently bolted down, that they were to be removable. And that's specifically in the plan, but they said, well, what's the difference? If we let them bolt down the wrought iron around it, we can get some rent out of it.
Right. Well, they also, of course, have done this most recently with Badass Coffee. There's outdoor area in front of that. I mean, it's not that I don't, you know, appreciate being able to sit outside to drink a cup of coffee. It's just that there's no public place where poor people or the general public without paying money can hang out. I mean, it's the idea of a plaza is gone. Benches get removed to the snap of a merchant's fingers, and you see these change-making machines put in order to make it clear that people can't sit within 50 feet or hold up a sign asking for spare change within 50 feet. What do you think?
Well, I think the rules themselves, I mean, if you're going to have a barricade against the ATM window, that is to protect someone from being afraid of someone standing over their shoulder when you're at your ATM machine and, let's say, punching in your PIN number. You certainly don't want that kind of thing, but that would apply to ATM machines anywhere. In the parking lot.
You don't need a 50-foot, safety zone in either direction. Similarly, you know, as far as, let's say, making sure that people aren't cluttering up the front of stores, though I think people who want to lean against a building in front of a store, provided they don't block an entrance, should be allowed to do so. They made it a 14-foot forbidden zone, not only up and down Pacific Avenue, but in front of every single business and every business district in the city of Santa Cruz. Which,
well, if this line up on at the Cinema 9 complex there, it goes around the corner, and that's ATM machines on the side of the building.
Well, you're allowed to stand. You just can't sit. You know, I mean, you can stand. I mean, of course, what you do is with the Cinema 9, people do sit down, you know, waiting for a line for the midnight movies, and the police ignore them. Same is true with the Civic Auditorium. People even camp out overnight, and the police ignore them. But if you're homeless, which is, of course, what the focus of these laws really is, to give the police enforcement tools, that's another matter. But getting back to city council, which I think, you know, it's pertinent to talk about here because these kinds of issues might be raised more frequently if people could remove a nasty item for discussion from the consent agenda, as you and I have occasionally done, and talk about it for a reasonable amount of time, 2 or 3 minutes, as customarily the case in other cities. What's happened now, under the new Coonerty rules, well, under the Rotkin rules where I was arrested, you were only allowed a total of 5 minutes for all the agenda items put together on the consent agenda, which might be as many as 20 or 30 items. So you'd have to talk for, I suppose, 25 seconds on, you know, 6 items, if you wanted to talk on 6 items, or, you know, that's not quite right. I'd say 40 seconds on 6 items. No, it made it very difficult to speak on items. And you certainly couldn't add your comments to an item if you already spoken for 5 minutes total on 1 minute on one item, 3 minutes on another, and 2 minutes on another, or 1 minute on another, and then somebody else took an item off and you felt you wanted to say something, you would not be allowed to say a word, even though you said nothing on that item. And that was what I was arrested for by Mayor Rotkin way back in 2005. And, you know, the courts diddled around with that one for 13 or 14 months, actually 16 months, before dropping it. Now that five-minute period has been reduced to 2 minutes. So you're only allowed to speak for 2 minutes to the city council unless they agree to take your item and set it aside and look at it separately, and then you and other people and the council can discuss it. But it looks to me like a serious shortening of time on public items. Doesn't that look like to you, Ed?
Well, yeah, that's part of it, but that's not the real, to me, that's not the real issue. The issue is whether you have permission to speak at all on an item, and that apparently the city council can say, no, we don't want to have the public speak on this item.
Well, see, this is interesting. If you go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is a website I recommend to people who want to hear more or read more discussion on this, I originally, that's how the mayor Coonerty talked about this issue 2 weeks ago. He would not allow Marilyn Garrett and others to talk about the LBAM checkmate item at all. The only thing he would say is, you can talk to us about why we should remove the item, but don't talk about the substance of the item, which to me was a really blatant violation of the Brown Act, the right to speak on every item a little bit, not a lot, but at least something if you really felt it was important, the right of the public to weigh in. And what they did at this council meeting was, after they got numerous inquiries from a number of us, and we kind of raised a little bit of a fuss, is they said, oh, no, we'll let you talk for 2 minutes about why we should hear this item separately. And that can include a discussion of the substance of the item. They added that. So now they kind of, they said to themselves, well, we don't want to be arrested for violating the state law that says you have to let people talk on these items. We'll give you 2 minutes to talk on 30 items. That's what they're saying. In other words, you can 10 seconds per item. Unless we agree to remove one of those items, and that's our choice, in which case we'll give you more time. That, I think, is their new position, isn't it?
But the real issue is whether...
Isn't that their new position, Ed?
They're trying to, based on our comments to them, they're trying to make it a little fuzzier as to what they're doing. But the basic underlying issue is that a noticed public hearing for a time certain is open to the public input, and they are trying to somehow inject themselves between the person wishing to speak on the item and the item itself. In other words, you have to request their permission to speak. Get someone to pull the item for you. That's what they're trying to do.
Well, but they've gotten around this by saying, you can talk for 2 minutes on the item and try to explain to us why it's important enough to give you more time, but that's all the time you will have to talk about any particular item you want to pull. You know, you can only talk for a total of 2 minutes total. So if you have 15 items you want to talk about, you can only talk for a total of 2 minutes on all those 15 items. You only get 2 minutes. You understand? I'm trying to explain to the public, Ed, what's going on. And what's going on is originally we thought they'd said you can't talk about these items at all unless we give your permission. Now they're saying, oops, we don't want to say that. They're saying, well, you can talk about the items, but only for 2 minutes. And then if we decide it's worth listening to, we'll give you more time. That's what they're saying now.
Okay. That's still a violation because they don't have to give you the time to speak on the item.
Well, and they don't have to give you more time to speak on the item.
You're not making the when an item's pulled, theoretically, it opens up the public hearing for that specific item, and you have perhaps the department head explaining what the issue is and some questions about that, and council members can get into the questioning, and Now, sometimes I'm not objecting to something. I think it's just something that needs public airing.
Now, wait a minute. Now, let's slow down here. We're looking at the specific issue, which is, are they saying you can't talk about the item? And the answer is no. They're saying you can talk about the item, but we will decide whether we want to talk about the item or, and this is important, allow anyone else to talk about the item. Because if you can go up there and ask all you want that an item be pulled. If they don't pull it, nobody else gets to talk about it unless they come up and ask that it be pulled, too. And then they only get this very brief two-minute period that covers everything they're trying to ask for. And often it could be one or two or three items they want to see more fully considered. It's particularly true in their large appropriations for consultants that they want to suddenly dish out all over the place or...
Unbid contracts.
Yeah, contracts which are what are called single source contracts. There's no competition. Sort of like the city attorney who gets the contract every year, regardless of what he's done the last year. Anyway, we're talking with Ed Davidson on our city council and how it's shortening public comment time. If you want to call in and comment on this, you can 427-3772. Ed is a council regular who I think is one of the reasons that they actually passed this law, though what they really, I think, want to do is they're trying to cut off, I think they don't want to hear from critics like yourself and me, Ed, frankly, but I also think that what they use is people like Michael Tomasi, who describes himself as the king of marijuana, he's an outspoken guy who lives in his van, a grizzled vet, idiosyncratic statements, often repetitious statements, sometimes colorful and true statements, for that matter. But he's kind of used as a mascot by the city council to say, see, this is why we have to cut back all the public comment time, because otherwise all you would hear would be Michael Tomasi endlessly talking. So I'm going to play a little more of this tape, Ed, and see if you want to chime in with some more comments.
Okay.
Now, this is an interesting procedure that they're using, which you already pointed out, Ed, is completely contrary to everything they've done in the past, and also is done in Watsonville. I called the Watsonville City Council, and they said what they do is they provide it's a longer period. I don't think it's 2 minutes. I think it's longer, where the public is allowed to make a presentation as to whether an item should be pulled off the agenda, where they can talk about the agenda item, and then if the city council decides they want to talk about it independently, they do, and otherwise they just pass the consent agenda as it's already one lump of items. So it is done in some cities, but in Watsonville there is rarely anything pulled off the city council agenda. It's almost never happened, according to the staff person I talked to. Whereas in Santa Cruz, this seems a direct reaction to limit the public. I mean, in other words, if the public never did it, it would be non-controversial. No one would object because nobody is interested in this part of the process, although I find that strange in Watsonville. Maybe they organize their consent agenda differently. You know, maybe there's better connection with city council members. But here, as you point out, they're trying to put people in the city council members as a barrier between you and your right to address an item that they're going to pass that will affect your tax dollars, how you interact with the police department, what areas you have a right to walk in, what the rules are, and, you know, what might have to do with your rents. It'll have to do with a lot of things. And you aren't allowed even a voice in this issue at all if it's on the consent agenda and they decide not to let you talk, except, of course, for your reference to it in this two-minute period where you get to beg the city council to allow you to say something.
Well, I think that the real issue on that is that it's something that I feel that should have been on the regular agenda rather than on the consent agenda. That may be one reason why I...
What should have been on the regular agenda?
The item that's... an item on consent agenda, if I think should have been on the regular agenda and subject to the...
Right, that's why you pull it off, because you think this should not just be breezed over and given a rubber stamp. It needs more discussion. But you, as a member of the public, now no longer have that option, unless Michael Rotkin or Cynthia Matthews or one of the other seven dwarfs believes that you have a right to do that. And, of course, that leaves it up to them, which, of course, is seems like, well... It ain't no, not only is it ain't no democracy, it seems like it removes a vital citizen right.
Well, it's a right that's built into the Brown Act.
Right.
The council does not have the right to prohibit someone from speaking to an item.
Not to mention the state and federal constitutions about the right to petition for, you know...
But what's important about that
redress
is,
of grievances.
What's important about that is if you want to challenge a decision that the council makes on whatever the item is, you believe that they have made an error and they should be challenged, you don't have the right to go to court anymore if you can't speak to the item.
Or hand in written correspondence.
Well,
that's the out they have. Let's not forget it, because that's what Mike Rotkin is going to say on Sunday when he comes on the air between 10 and 11 and defends this practice. If who knows, maybe he won't. Maybe he's a critic and he says, well, I'm not the mayor anymore, I can't make a decision. He was supposed to send me all the information about this item, and he sent me absolutely nothing in the last 10 days.
No, the written material can be used as the basis for your lawsuit, but the fact that you didn't speak after the item was noticed. Now, essentially, the public hearing starts at 3 o'clock, whenever the meeting's called into session, That's when the public hearing starts, and written material is not necessarily appropriate at that time.
You know, Ed, I understand your point, but I think, you know, it's...
It's not an excuse that written material gives you standing to bring a lawsuit.
Well, the point is, if you want to sue somebody on a consent agenda item, even if you weren't able to speak on it, if you gave written material, you could, couldn't you?
Right.
So, therefore, their answer is... It's not important, Ed. If you want, that's not the issue. You're saying you can't sue us? No, you can. All you got to do is write down something on the issue before it started.
That's not exactly correct. What it says is that if you bring a lawsuit, you are limited in the issues you raised at the public hearing or in written correspondence.
So in a way, this would mean that. You know, in theory, you could bring up all these issues in your letter to the city council, having read the consent agenda item, which would appear only 72 hours before. That's when the agenda usually comes out on Thursday night, and then the city council meeting is Tuesday morning. Doesn't give you a lot of time to look it over. Let's suppose you look it over, you write everything up, you send them a letter. The point is, if you aren't allowed to have an item discussed in the usual manner at city council, you can't hear what the staff says, you can't hear what other members of the community say, you can't hear what the council says. Instead, it's a rubber stamp by the city council. And so I think that significantly truncates the public process. I'm going to play a little bit more, Ed.
Okay.
Do we have any oral communications about items on the consent agenda? I'm Ed Davidson, for the record. I'm not certain that I'm comfortable with the procedure that you just outlined. I don't believe I need to get anybody's permission to talk on a public, a notice public hearing item. I do want to make a comment on the item three, the living wage, and it's not that I'm opposed to it necessarily, but I just wanted to make a public comment about the item. Do you want me to go into substance now, or?
Yeah.
Notice, Coonerty interrupted you. You asked him, do you want me to go into substance now? At the previous meeting, 2 weeks before, when that same question was asked him, can we talk about the item in terms of what it's really all about? He said, no, you cannot. You can only talk about why you want us to hear the item. You remember? Are you with me? I'm sorry, I'd speak up again. I had your mic down.
I hadn't been at that meeting. So I don't
know. I actually reviewed the tape pretty carefully, and I was outraged at that. So Coonerty has altered his position, probably on the advice of the city attorney, or because he himself is a lawyer, and he realizes he cannot, he can't simply cut off public comment when people are noticing it. So what he's done instead is he said, you asked, can I talk about the substance of it? And the reason you asked that for a real question, because here you are kind of bowing and scraping and going up to the city council to ask if you should in fact be allowed to do which is your right to do. And you're naturally concerned about A, appearing like some kind of fiery, you know, ill-mannered rebel brute. If you have to speak out, you know, beyond the framework of the meeting. But also here you are, you know, your right to talk directly to the community and to the council about this issue is being interfered with the bogus claim that these people have the right to decide whether you have the right to speak. Isn't that your point?
That's my point. But I think he was being a little bit gratuitous to me based on the emails back and forth that we've had, and I think he understands that I'm in the right, and he's willing to kind of shade the procedure of
Ryan Coonerty, you're talking about Mayor Coonerty,
and at the same time, at the end of this whole session, I said, or during oral communications, I said, you know, you gave me 2 minutes to give why I should take it off, and then 2 minutes to talk about the issue itself, and that's 4 minutes, which is I never get 4 minutes. How much time are you saving through this process? Why don't you just go back?
Yeah, I mean, it's very bizarre. I mean, of course, it's not bizarre. It's an attempt to, I think it's clearly like the moving oral communications to the end of the afternoon agenda, where you're talking about the right of the public to comment on subjects not on the agenda. This business about the consent agenda that we're talking about at the Santa Cruz City Council, and I'm talking with Ed Davidson, is an attempt to discourage the public from speaking. I mean, the public relies on, to some extent, on the opinion and advice and authority of the city council. They don't want to offend the council. After all, they're there trying to get the approval of the council for various items.
Let me get into one kind of reason that I would pull an item off consent. This happened a couple of years ago. The consent agenda item was to accept a grant for federal funds for Homeland Security. It was divvied up among the states, and then the states divvied it up among the communities. Everybody got a little bit of Homeland Security money. And at the same time, we were hearing stories from on the press about some cities that were using it for, you know, heat lamps or, you know, something totally unrelated to Homeland Security. They were just wasting these funds. And the fact that all it said was to accept the funds, I didn't see what the program and whether we were going to be using it in a proper fashion. So I pulled the item off and I asked what we were going to do with our funds. And the police chief got up and made a very nice presentation of perfectly appropriate and useful, good use that the money was going to be made of. And everybody in the public was informed, including the council members, of what a good program we had come up with. And that, to me, is a public service.
And I'm sure that what response of Mike Rotkin is going to be something to the effect of, yeah, but Michael Tomasi got to speak for 3 minutes, and Robert Norris got to speak for 3 minutes, and other people who didn't know where they were wandered up to the mic and tried to say something, weren't sure what they were doing. It extended the staff time. It extended the city meeting. And this happens on a number of agenda items. So we are simply trying to be more economical with our time. That's the endless refrain from Mike Rotkin and the Santa Cruz City Council. They don't need you to educate the public. We don't need anything from the public. The staff has decided it, so just lie down and shut up.
Well, I think that if they're really concerned about the time, perhaps they can give the person who pulled the item 3 minutes and anybody else who wants to speak on it 1 minute.
You know, I think if they're really concerned I disagree with you. I think if they're really concerned about the time, they can give themselves 3 minutes or less. They can apportion the time much more quickly among themselves instead of having long-winded filibusters and endless attacks that that Rotkin likes to, you know, he ends up, he did this with you and he did this with me at the meeting. He kind of likes to round everything out with a, see, everything's okay, these people are full of shit kind of speech in the smiliest kind of way. And often this involves a lengthy exchange. And so a lot of the time is taken up because we do raise legitimate issues with the council having to defend themselves. Well, they should defend themselves, you know, in a more limited time. After all, they're more experienced speakers than we are. They do it all the time. Why should we have to sit and listen to them for hours and hours? Well, the one thing I do favor that Coonerty seemed to put forward in his new rules is he says he's limiting the staff to 10 minutes. I think he should limit the staff to 5 minutes. You know, and then if they want an extension, they can ask for an extension. But obviously, like the federal legislature, I think these legislators should be limited in the amount of time they can speak if they're so damn concerned about the amount of time they want to allow the public to speak. What do you think?
That's good. I think that I think about the Coastal Commission meetings, which I attend many, and they limit the staff presentation time, and they... And the public, usually it's 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
How about the commission itself?
They do cut the time on the commissioners' discussion of something. They're trying to get through a long agenda, and they got a zillion items, and they can't go through too involved. And sometimes you'll see a back and forth because there's a real disagreement on something.
Well, Ed, I thought you were very eloquent in a lot of the things you said. I mean, for many people, this is sort of an arcane issue. Who gives a fuck about the council anyway? You can't get anything meaningful on the agenda in terms of rent control, community control of police, downtown plaza, reopening public spaces, the war against drugs, you name it. There's nothing that they're willing to do because they're under the thumb of certain interests. So why the hell should we bother about these arcane details at City Council? And I'm asking the question, but I'm not really going to give you a chance to answer it now because I've got somebody coming on in 4 minutes and I got to prepare for him. But I want to remind listeners that at 10 o'clock on Sunday, day after tomorrow, Councilmember Mike Rotkin will be in the studio with me and possibly Yon Golder. And you're welcome to call in then, Ed, and raise these issues again. And I may also play some more of the City Council tape towards the end of this 2-hour period, the 2-hour show that we're doing now.
Okay.
And thank you for calling in.
All the best.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Ed Davidson. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. is what you're broadcasting, what we're broadcasting on to you, and what you're listening on, I guess. If you want to listen to the show later, it's archived, www.huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. If you want to catch me off air with something, 423-4833 is the Santa Cruz phone number, 423-4833. Coming up next, I'm going to assume, is Paul Bowden from RAP. RAP is the Western Regional Advocacy Project. Reading from its website, it exists to expose and eliminate the root causes of civil and human rights abuses of people experiencing poverty and homelessness in our communities. Their goals, to unite local social justice organizations to build a movement that is inclusive and shares power with all members of the community, to hold the federal government responsible and accountable for the restoration of affordable housing funding and the protection of poor and homeless people's rights, to develop with the community effective and socially just solutions to all barriers that prevent the ending of homelessness, to ensure the policies and priorities of local, state, and federal governments are grounded in the common truths of a majority of poor and homeless people. We are 6 West Coast organizations with a long track record of organizing with poor and homeless people from the bottom up. We've come together to create RAP because we believe things have to change. And the group, the RAP members are BOSS, Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, which is a Berkeley organization. We've had Michael Deal from Berkeley talking about what he's been doing as a homeless advocate on the streets in Berkeley. Coalition on Homelessness San Francisco, Jennifer Friedenbach has been on the air talking from the coalition. They also publish the monthly paper Street Sheet. Los Angeles Community Action Network, LA Can. You may remember, some of you were listening this summer when we did the Sleep Out at City Hall, Homies for the Homeless Sleep Out, that General Dogan and two other activists from LA Can came up to help support the homeless people who stayed a week at City Hall in defiance of the unconstitutional sleeping ban law, which is still on the books, criminalizing homeless people in Santa Cruz. 1,500 to 2,000 of them tonight, 100 in space for 150 in shelter, $97 fines for those who get the sleeping ban citations or camping tickets, no legal shelter for the overwhelming majority of them. The other three organizations, Real Change, which is a Seattle-based newspaper run by Tim Harris and others, Sisters of the Road, a restaurant in Portland, Oregon that has been active for at least a decade and a half, and Street Spirit, a homeless newspaper that is distributed and sold in Santa Cruz, published in the East Bay, edited by Terry Messman, and a very inclusive and interesting paper with whom I have some policy disagreements and at different times, but I've also written for, and I encourage people to read because there is a lot of really important stuff in there that needs to be looked at. And it's actually online under thestreetspirit.org, www.thestreetspirit.org, and it's in the Santa Cruz Public Library. If you want to go down to the Santa Cruz Public Library main branch, some of the issues seem to be missing. I'm going to try to replace those issues probably tomorrow or the next day if I get down there to do it. More from the RAP website. From L.A. to Seattle, the clear trend is toward growing inequality and heightened repression of people who are poor. In Los Angeles, homeless people are routinely arrested and jailed for such poverty crimes as camping and sleeping on the sidewalk. And that's still true in spite of the Jones decision, which I've talked about at such length in the past. The decision said that the city's specific law that says you can't sit, sleep, or lie on the sidewalks in Los Angeles has been overturned by a settlement with the Ninth Circuit Federal Court, or okayed by that court, where people are allowed to cannot be arrested under that law if they are 10 feet from a business until such time as, I think it's 1,250 units of affordable housing are built, provided they're not blocking the entrances of stores between the hours of 9 p.m. and 6 a.m., which, of course, is a better deal than in Santa Cruz, where anytime after 11 o'clock at night, if you fall asleep, it is illegal for you to sleep. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Hi there, caller.
Yeah, hi there, Robert.
Hey, Paul. Paul Bowden, welcome to Free Radio.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing your work with RAP. I was just reading your website, itemizing the organizations, reading your goals and your mission, and then talking about, I'd gotten as far as what's happening in Los Angeles. You're calling us from San Francisco?
Correct. Yes,
so,
I am.
All righty. Well, where would you begin to talk about where we're at in terms of civil liberties in 2008 for homeless people? Bear in mind that you're talking to an audience that hears me rant on about this twice a week locally, so that's the background.
Okay, well, then let me, if then we can assume the audience doesn't hear need to hear the 101 stuff in regards to... Our feeling is that we, as community groups, so I'm not pointing fingers, that we have been documenting and talking about what is being done to us for far too long, and that we can compile that documentation. If you've seen our Without Housing report that was on there, just like we could compile the documentation that there was a direct connection between the federal government abandoning its funding responsibilities for affordable housing programs and the opening of shelters in 1983 again, for the first time since the Great Depression, that there is also a direct connection between the massive increase in the numbers of mentally ill people that are in our prison system today, of the numbers of young people of color that are being forced out of local communities through gang injunction and stay away orders, the numbers of day laborers and immigrant people that are being harassed on a regular basis, incarcerated without due process, and sometimes, oftentimes, kicked out of this country, and what's happening with homeless people. It's the same concept, which is we don't want you around. Jim Crow had that concept. The anti-Okie laws had that concept of the 30s. We don't want you here. And we're going to use the power of government and its influence on media and its ability to manipulate facts and its ability to prioritize. We want more prisons. We can find the money to build more prisons. We, as community people, want a reinvestment in affordable housing. Suddenly government tells us we can't find the money. That's power. That's control.
Of course, they can find the $14 billion per month for Afghanistan and Iraq, right?
Of course they can. And at a local level, I have yet, in the 25 years since I came up off the street and been messing with government over this issue, I have yet to see a mayor. Forget about just, you know, I'm not saying forget about Iraq, but putting the federal government's power aside for a minute, looking at just the local government, I have yet, going back to Feinstein, Agnos, Jordan, Brown, Newsom, I have yet to meet a mayor that was not able to find the money to do something that that mayor really wanted to do.
Well, Newsom insists, and let me jump to this, this is more in your territory, that he's having a great time successfully finding housing and, what was it, cash not care type provisions. Maybe you can give us a brief rundown on that.
Well, it's actually care, not cash.
Oops, sorry about that.
Big distinction.
Yes.
You know, there's a premise that, and this happened ironically because, you know, on March 12th is the 75th anniversary of Roosevelt signing the New Deal and creating HUD and creating the WPA and the Conservation Corps and the arts programs and the education programs that were created as part of the New Deal. he had Roosevelt and them, obviously it wasn't just Roosevelt, had the same battle with corporate America during the WPA, which was they felt that poor people couldn't be trusted to be given cash and that the cash should go to the corporations and the corporations would give vouchers to the workers because, of course, these were homeless bums and couldn't be trusted. Nowadays, what we see is a liberal, quote-unquote, liberal Democrat saying poor people can't be trusted with cash, so we're going to give them care instead. And so shelter beds that were already available now became commodities that poor people that were on welfare were forced to buy in the form of having government deduct the money for that bed from their welfare check and giving them the $59 a month that's left over. And, you know, you can call it successful because, as with Gingrich and Clinton's contract on America, there's a lot more people, a lot less people on welfare. But the issue isn't that they've now bought a white, you know, a house with a white picket fence in the suburbs. The issue is they weren't going to do 15 hours a week of slave labor, sweeping streets and cleaning muni buses and doing laundry at San Francisco General in exchange for a shelter bed, and you really can't blame them.
Shelters, services are not so hot anyway in San Francisco, right?
Shelter's not housing. Shelter is congregant living with a bunch of people that you don't know coming from different walks of life and facing different circumstances, and with a jailhouse mentality about crowd control. And I'm not saying that all the shelter staff act like jailhouse thugs, because I was shelter staff and I tried not to, but I still had to treat it as a congregate room. And if one dude was having a serious problem, even if he was decompensating, and I had two choices, I could keep everybody up all night to accommodate this one dude, or I could try to remove this one dude from the room where everybody else was so that the other 79 people could sleep. You know, that's jailhouse mentality.
There have been claims that New York and Portland, I heard this as I listened to the debate in Santa Monica, on a Tuesday Santa Monica City Council meeting where they're considering increasing panhandling restrictions down there and also praising this 10-year, what is it, plan to end homelessness, which I'm sure you probably have a thing or two to say about in San Francisco.
No, well, my comments on the 10-year plan are national. It's the public relations aspect of addressing homelessness, which seems to be the primary focus of governments throughout the country and certainly of the federal government. The dude's name is Phil Mangano. He works for Bush. He was hired by Bush to be the interagency council homeless czar in addressing homelessness. And what he's done in the 8 years he's been there, 7 years he's been there, is he's gotten 325 communities across the country to write 10-year plans to end homelessness, while his boss, the president, has cut funding for housing, treatment, education, and jobs. And you look at his website, the Interagency Council, Our Money, Our Tax Dollars website, and it looks like a rock and roll tour, because the dude's job before he became Bush's homeless czar was he was a tour manager for Peter, Paul, and Mary in Buffalo, Springfield, and he knows PR. PR is what he did. It's what he cut his teeth at.
Well, I noticed when I was listening to the testimony from the grassroots, well, not grassroots, but the local Santa Monica, I would call them poverty pimps, you know, people who are funded by this federal money to cook up these 10-year plans, talking about how they want to spend $100,000 for consultants to figure out how to put out a PR campaign to tell the public not to give money to poor people, but to give it instead to agencies.
And what we talk about in the report, the Without Housing report, is that's really not all that different from Clinton's 5-year plans. You know, it's not all that different from the local plans that had been written before Clinton required everybody to write 5-year plans and submit them to him. It is how our government is responding to the issue of homelessness because and only because we let them get away with it.
In other words, not responding to the issue of homelessness.
Pretending, giving a pretense to responding to the issue of homelessness.
You've gotten together six organizations up and down the coast. BOSS, Coalition on Homelessness, LA Can, Real Change, Sisters of the Road, and Street Spirit to help organize.
And now Street Roots.
Oh, good. Yeah, I like Street Roots. We
all do.
What do you recommend for activists in other cities like Santa Cruz to do to fight back?
Well, what is now the Western Regional Advocacy Project, RAP, and people can check it out, raphome.org. Is that right? Yeah, raphome.org. We can all do it. I mean, basically it came out of an idea. Chicago, New York, and I had pitched this idea to the National Coalition for the Homeless years ago as opposed to having D.C.-based staffing and mindset and advocacy work being done, that you would have regional offices around the country so that the work you're doing and the positions you're taking and the organizing that you're helping pull together, you don't do the organizing in a job like mine now. You work with organizations that do local organizing to support their stuff. And that we saw that as a model that we might use through the National Coalition to start really connecting the local organizations and the D.C.-based work that's got to get done.
What kind of success has RAP or this previous model of the National Coalition for the Homeless had that you feel encouraged by?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, the National Coalition didn't adopt the model, and so rather than just not see it happen, a group of us decided to try it out and see if we could do it on the West Coast.
You've been doing it for about 2-3 years now?
2 years, yeah, a little bit over 2 years.
And I know that this has also been, similar kinds of things have been done, the Civil Rights Organizing Project, a couple of other predecessor projects, I think...
Trial and error, man.
Yeah, no, I'm not criticizing.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm,
I know.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But I mean, and also, I mean, I think you look at the old CIO organizing of the, in the labor movement years ago. I mean, and even what we're talking about with rap, this is nothing new. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea that you would have an office that, you know, is, you know, trying to connect together the work of local communities on a regional level, that's not new stuff. But it really hasn't been done on an organizing basis when it comes to connecting homelessness to the bigger issues of poverty and racism and social injustice, and really making the issue of homelessness not about us homeless people or those homeless people, but about social justice in the United States.
And how has that had any tangible, taken any tangible form in the last year or two that people you can point to and say, here's where we're at now with that issue in terms of rap?
I would say tangible. I would say I would say that the fact that Without Housing has been downloaded off of our website 14,000 times in a little bit over a year, and has gotten 2,200 copies out to local communities, and the artwork and the building of the artist collaborative and bringing in really lively, really kick-butt artwork to give life to the data that most reports have, you know, is a first step in trying to create a name for a group of organizations that are trying to put out a message. And right now our message is, and has been, you know, yeah, we're working in Skid Row. Yeah, we're working in the Tenderloin. Yeah, we're working in Old Town in Portland. Yeah, we are doing that direct community-based work. But we can do that work till we can't breathe anymore, until we connect that work with other organizations and other communities that are doing the same work with the same belief system of social justice and nonviolence, and of this being about poverty and racism and classism, not just about homelessness. You know, until we start making those connections, we're not going to change this. Have to start making those connections.
Did you listen to Democracy Now! Today?
No, I did not.
There was a speechwriter for King's 67 speech where he came out against the Vietnam War, was interviewed, and it was there was a significant, you know, the significant point being that he was trying to draw all this stuff together in the Poor People's March of 1968, as, you know, sort of the occupation of Washington. Anyway, they got rained out, and I guess they got shot out, too, eventually. But
it's so obvious. If you just try to address one particular issue within the broader issue of racism, you're not going to end racism. If you microscope down one particular issue in the broader issue of healthcare as a human right and say, well, that only applies if you're left-handed and we're talking about tuberculosis, you're not going to end, you know, people not being able to access healthcare. You got to connect the dots and build power through the numbers of people that connect to the message you're putting out, not because you convince them to vote a certain way.
So what about this traditional divide between, you know, like anti-war liberals or liberals concerned about sort of issues that involve, you know, feminism or that involve you know, gay rights, but when it comes to homeless, that's the ghetto issue. They don't want to jump on board with that one. We see it in terms of politicians in Santa Cruz, politicians like Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin, who call themselves socialists, but support anti-homeless laws. I'm sure you see it in a lot of these other cities, too.
I mean, San Francisco claims that they haven't elected a Republican in 30 years or something like that, but we've got the nastiest anti-homeless people laws in the country. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I mean, you got Matt Gonzalez running with Ralph Nader. He announced today. Has he been responsible for any? How did you rate him when before RAP, you were you know, main force, one of the main people behind the Coalition on Homelessness, and probably spent some time trying to get the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco off the dime, right?
You think? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, right.
I did spend some time on that, and I would continue to spend time on that because I still live in San Francisco, and I still work for the coalition. I just do it as the RAP office now. But
I mean, people regard Gonzalez and Nader as you know, left to the left.
I think here's the thing, Robert. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think the thing I'm trying to talk about, or that I would like to see us talk about, and you know, Jeremy and the marathon, the homelessness marathon, I would love to see them dedicate 3 hours to this next year,
uh-huh.
As opposed to 1 hour, which is, when do we get tired and past talking about what they are doing to us or what they should do for us? Like, when do we start really focusing on what do we want, not are they doing what we want? Because I really think that's the message that's mm-hmm. missing for enough people to get together so that the neoliberal sellout under the guise of being, you know, a Green Party member or a Democrat or a humanitarian or whatever they call it, humanist, that racism and classism play in within that community because it's about human beings. And you got to change that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You are trying to get different organizations together, and I guess what I was thinking, I wasn't so much saying, you know, what are Gonzalez and Nader doing, but I was looking at the organizations that you're appealing to. I guess they have to be organizations that at some basic level have some both representation, sympathy, or fundamental empathy with what's going on above and beyond traditional bullshit.
And it's really cool. Like, they're really different the members of RAP you're talking about?
Yeah,
the beauty of it is they're really different organizations, but they signed on to a document, our founding document, which talks about, you know, what are the core beliefs that we hold as paramount.
Which I read earlier, actually.
And that which is on the website and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they all signed off on that. You have to sign, and you can't just say, oh, someday I want to do it. Is you have to say, this is what we do.
What about, and actually, let me say, I'm talking with Paul Bowden of the Western Regional Advocacy Project, formerly the Coalition on Homelessness, has been working on this issue for decades, or at least 2 decades, 3 decades?
25 years, yeah.
25 years. You can call in. You got how much time you got, Paul?
I got another 10 minutes, quarter after.
Okay. Let me suggest if anybody wants to talk to Paul, they can call in 427-3772, ask him a question, make a comment. Is there anything the organizations are I'm all for ideals, and I think we all agree on ideals. Are there specific tasks? Is it what is it that the organizations are trying to do? I know that in the past, when some of these organizations have gotten together, the object has been to set up a format for restoring civil rights by empowering people from the bottom, or the coalition.
No, they're already that stuff. That's not how we work. Is
yeah.
Those core values that are put up there? There's four of them, five of them.
Uh-huh.
Like, you have to be doing it. You can't say, "Oh, it's what we want to do." But that wasn't like so much of a screening thing. That was something that came from the RAP members when we had our first meeting. Like, and the putting out without housing first. And I wish that people that listen to this would go and check it out, only because the artwork is as vital to it. And now you'll see there's artists from all over the country that are putting artwork on our website that's available for free to anybody that wants to use it. That's social justice-based homelessness artwork. Like, that we're trying to, so we did without housing, and it's a great document. It's gotten us invited to speak all over the country, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't really have an organizing campaign behind it.
And when you say organizing campaign, I mean, let's, for the next, I'm trying to understand, if a new organization were to be created in Santa Cruz or in some other city, were there some criteria for what?
Well, see, here's the thing: is RAP isn't really a new organization.
It's a coalition.
RAP is an effort among six organizations that have already been around. I think the newest one is 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
This is not new.
Right.
And them saying, okay, Paul, so you're going to shift over from working at the coalition to opening this office that we're all going to call RAP. And you're going to start working for all of us instead of just working for the coalition, so we can start figuring out how do we connect our work and how do we connect what it is we're doing.
And the connections you found so far have been things like you mentioned artwork, you've mentioned the housing issue.
And now it's civil rights.
And what form is that concern with civil rights taken? Here in Santa Cruz, we're preparing a lawsuit to try to not only end the local anti-homeless sleeping ban, but to stop the police from enforcing any kind of law that criminalizes homeless people for, you know, for doing that kind of essential human function at night, specifically sleeping. In Los Angeles, Jones was able to do that, but they're starting to use different laws now that, you know, they're running doing other things. We're looking to fight it legally.
What we're doing, and you'll see, like, there's a link to Without Housing where people can go look at that. There's a link to Without Rights, we call it. But there's nothing up there yet. We're just finished what we call our concept paper.
Well, I know that a couple years ago you did some serious work trying to find out from homeless people themselves what they felt the major issues were. And you came out with some, as a coalition on homelessness persons, some position papers. Has anything developed out of that? That was itself a civil rights advocacy project, a form that people were using. We still use it here somewhat.
Yeah, and these guys are doing that in L.A. They're doing Saturday on March 13th. I'm going up to Seattle to hang out with them while they do their second camp out in front of City Hall in the past 2 months. I mean, these guys are doing their on the ground. That's what I mean about RAP. The membership of RAP ain't new to this game. And they play very serious, and they play really hard. And they're very committed to the community from which they come.
What do you hear from Ontario, California?
I'm not sure what...
Ontario, California is a community down south which has probably the largest tent city in the United States
right now. Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about.
And I was very surprised. It's a sort of a middle-class suburb of Los Angeles. And the mayor would allow such a thing to happen and to grow in his area. And I'm going to try to get the mayor in a subsequent show to come on the air and talk about it.
I respect that stuff, and you know, from like my history, it's not like I don't feel like the local groups need to be doing that. But I feel like for years, and Robert, you and I have talked for years about sometimes things are going really cool in the city and the energy is really good and things come together, and then other times the energy is not so good, or, you know, things start getting divisive and projects fall apart. I mean, that's the life cycle of direct on the street fighting back against the personal attacks.
And I know that L.A. can. We've had General Dogon
and Becky. Awesome people.
Yeah, Becky Davidson on talking about, you know, the day-to-day struggle in Skid Row and actually, you know, fighting the ACLU sellout down there, where the ACLU kind of abandoned the Jones decision over the wishes of the activists and the kind of, you know, people are kind of fighting.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, you know, what I love about L.A. can is one of the things, there's a bunch of things, but one of them is they don't define it as fighting the ACLU sellout. I mean, they were doing this work in Skid Row long before that legislation took place. They take a very strong position that they disagreed with the ACLU's compromise.
Right.
But they're not fighting the ACLU, and they're not fighting the ACLU sellout.
No, I hear
they're
you.
They're fighting for their lives.
And your point is well taken.
Yeah.
You want to know who your real enemies are.
Well, you want to create a message, like, and this is, I think, the learning curve stuff of being around for a while. Mayors come and go. The enemy that you're fighting tends to come and go the more you personalize that enemy. Today, Phil Mangano is Bush's point person. 2 years from now, God forbid, we're having the same discussion we're having tonight, which we had 10 years ago, which we had 10 years before that. And it'll be a different name.
Right.
Until we flip the scenario and until we take power in terms of creating the dialogue, creating an agenda, you know, that's where I think we learn a lot from looking at the organizing that the CIO was doing during the Depression and the organizing that's gone before us.
And
that, you know, we got to start educating each other, getting really articulate, and getting really serious.
Well, the CIO, of course, organized massive numbers of people who were working, and they sat down on the job.
They also were doing a lot of organizing with people that weren't working. Organizing around poverty and the social injustice taking place in local communities and in the mines.
Well, I know the Wobblies were, that's for sure. Know? But before that, I know the communists were in the 20s and 30s, too.
Well, that was the big rap on the CIO, right?
That they were communist
dominated. They were filled with all them red menace.
Yeah, well, now it's you terrorists we have to watch out for.
Yeah, but you know what? They never worry about us. They never say, oh, we got to watch out for Robert Norris, or we got to watch out for Paul Bowden on a national level. And the fact that we don't have identified leaders within our movement, and I'm not saying me and you, Robert. I'm saying that we need to create an infrastructure within our movement where people like that can start coming forward, where people actually can get enough different organizations behind a message that we start finding out who's the best people to deliver that message. And then that person becomes the threat.
Well, Keith McHenry was regarded as that for a while.
Not on a national level.
Well, he was on a couple of lists, I know that.
I don't mean their paranoid conspiracy stuff. I'm just
right.
Talking about even within ourselves. You know, creating an environment where the next Malcolm X can come forward.
Huh.
You know, or where the next Dorothy Day can come forward. We got to create a movement that's strong enough for people that brilliant.
You know, I mean, I wonder
to start if, stepping forward as our leaders.
I wonder if Martin Luther King came out of a movement like that, there was a movement. I mean, it's been going on for years.
Certainly there was. He could never have done that by himself.
Oh, of course not. But he was articulating
a message that a lot of other people were a part of creating. He just articulated it so eloquently and so brilliantly.
Well, you're not a bad speaker yourself, Paul.
Yeah, no shit. I'm sorry.
No shit. So we're talking with Paul Bowden of the Western Regional Advocacy Project, RAP, which is at raphome.org.
Yeah, raphome.org, WRAPHOME.
And I apologize to listeners for kind of getting into what may sound like coded discussions with Paul here. It's like we're having a private phone call here, but Paul has been articulate, outspoken, and don't let it go to your head, Paul. Brilliant speaker for many years, and I'm glad you're still doing it. So
yeah, well, it's good talking to you too, Robert.
All right, man.
Take care, bro.
Thank you. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. You can call in if you want, 427-3772. It's a rare day when we can actually talk about a victory. And I'm going to try to get the victor on the line here, because I understand that we have a victory, although it sounds like I also have a caller on another line, so I'm going to have to wait on that call. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Oops. Well, my goodness, I lose both calls. What a bummer. Let me try again here. As I said, it's really encouraging when you get the odd victory, and odd it is. I'm going to let the victor himself talk a little bit about it, if I can get him on the line. And I may or may not be able to do that because his cell phone is temperamental. And it looks like it's not going to be happening. Maybe he's hoisting a pint in a bar in honor of his victory celebration. Yeah, I'm afraid not. I'm afraid I've got a... Yeah, he's not available. Let's see who we've got on the line here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
A hero for the plebeians.
Well, don't use those big words there, caller. You know, talk American, okay?
Lumpen proletariat.
Oh, dear. No, I don't mean, don't talk commie talk. Talk English.
It's a good rap because it's insightful. Dorothy Day, Catholic worker. People that actually pulled stuff off.
Uh-huh.
For the
yeah.
Lumpens, right?
For the
down and dirty lumpens. Like, I guess you could throw Mother Teresa in that camp. and other people that do actions, maybe like in Darfur. But your comments, Robert, about leadership for the lumpen proletariats, what I understand the Romans did is they fed them. The great masses of people in Rome were extremely poor. So in order to prevent revolt, they fed them and circused them, right, with shows at the Colosseum.
Well, first they looted them of their lands, they impressed them into military service, and then they gave them a bit of the loot and the spoils. That's what the Romans did.
We could continue with that. Certainly there was a ruling class. It was a plutocracy.
Big time, right? Man.
Okay. As to what you do now and where you draw your line.
I mean, one-third
and
of
who
society.
Is lumping.
One-third right. of the society in Rome was slave, so keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. I 1 in 3 people in what would have been Italy then was a slave.
But what yeah. is – I mean, I don't recall my talking about ways to get leaders. That was what – I think
well,
Paul Bowden was
Well, it brings
talking
to
that.
My mind
yeah.
slave uprisings,
yeah.
peasant revolts.
Yeah, yeah.
These things have happened, mm-hmm. and I would imagine peasant revolts were reacted to by drawing and quartering or something, you know, quite visual to draw home the point, impaling.
Oh, sure.
Right? You don't topple or even think about reacting to the status quo.
Right.
Serfs in Russia.
But
brutal.
I should really tell you about our most recent victory because sometimes...
Victory,
yes. We had a victory which I was going to let... Yon Golder announced. Yon is an occasional speaker on the show and who has been fighting the city on a number of issues and on behalf of a couple of poor and homeless women, or some of the, one of them's poor and one of them lives in her vehicle. A woman named Donna Dice was given several citations by Chief Ranger John Wallace last August for having her RV parked in Lighthouse Field parking lot A. And she wasn't doing anything wrong except she had parked it there. She wasn't sleeping in it. She wasn't dumping unhealthful fluids. She wasn't blocking the way. None of that stuff. She wasn't even violating any of the time limits. It's just that Wallace had arbitrarily posted a sign that said no RVs allowed in this parking lot. So she's taken that ticket to court, and in order to determine what's going on, we've made public records acts to find out just when the Parks and Rec Department decided that certain parking lots could be ruled out of bounds to RVs. Because that's significant. A lot of people live in their vehicles.
What was the outcome? Was
the outcome was
petition overruled.
First thing they did was they refused to provide any public records. So we kept coming back. Then we went to them and asked for public records. They called the police to try to stop us from getting public records. We pulled out our tape recorders and said, good, well, let's put this on the radio. That police backed off. Most recently, they're still looking for the public records, but...
Here it comes.
I'm just trying. This is the build-up. This is the build-up, Bob. Yon got a phone call today from Donna Dice, the woman who had gotten all these citations and was harassed by Wallace. And she went down to the Lighthouse Field parking lots. They are removing all the signs and spraying over all the repainted lines that they repainted to make it too small for RVs. Because it turns out they were violating the provisions of the law that they had agreed to in terms of their leasing the area from the state, as Yon found out.
Well, lucky for Ms. Dice that the authorities didn't decide to impale her.
Lucky for all of us that we have people standing
well,
up on
agree?
These issues.
And yes, I agree with you, Robert, and that the stone can be moved, and bureaucracy will make its play to set up boundaries.
And cover its butt. Yeah, like we find with Ryan Coonerty and doing his stuff at City Council last Tuesday, suddenly backing off from saying, oh, you can't talk on half the agenda items. Well, I guess you can, he says. So, you know, it's if people stand up and say no, there's a chance that they can prevail. If they don't, of course, there's no chance.
Last question, if I might ask you.
Sure.
How would you define and what term would you use for lumpen proletariat?
Who knows? The people. How about the people?
No, I think the term means...
How about the poor people?
The poorest of the poor.
Okay.
The completely displaced.
Yeah, that's good.
That which Bob Avakian says, revolution is the hope of the hopeless.
Well, the revolution is the hope of a lot of people. I mean, remember, Castro was not... He was an educated guy. He went up in the hills with a gun to fight Batista. So,
you know. Yeah, and Goebbels had a PhD.
I don't know if I'd call him a revolutionary. Although
he certainly had his convictions. And he went to his grave with him and took others with him.
Well, there are many people who you know engage in coups and you know.
Castro, as I think I've expressed,
Goebbels was not in any danger. Was in little danger of assassination, whereas I think Castro was repeatedly in danger of assassination.
They have less of a visible police state around him, but nonetheless, Robert. Okay, certainly. Castro lifted the lumpen proletariat, no question about it.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, what do you do next?
Well, that's
right? I mean, is that what you do? Is you and then the consequences of 50 years of micromanagement? I think this.
It sounds like an issue that's
for question.
It's an issue too big for this for one guy here on the radio station.
I hear you. But you brought up Fidel, baby. The fact that you can't get, to my knowledge, on the global internet in China without express permission from the authorities.
The reason I brought him up was
the reason
I brought up that was because, you know, he's an educated guy, and you said, you know, the poorest of the poor.
That's why I brought up Goebbels. I mean, he said things about the
rights of the areas. This is about victories in Santa Cruz and how do we build on them and how do we go forward with them so there's real public participation and not participation so that, you know, we can restore basic rights that have been essentially denied for decades.
Well, I think there is the lumpen proletariat remains represented in Santa Cruz. Don't you feel? Right?
No.
I think so. I mean, one of the things that I think is cool about this town, by the way, is
who's their representative?
It has a certain visibility.
Who's their representative?
Like your previous, the interview you did had, the guy said, you know, where is the Dorothy Day, right? And those people, who is the guy, Mitch Snyder? Remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there are people that...
Mitch Snyder, for those who don't
Mitch
know,
Snyder,
he was an activist who established the first homeless shelter homeless shelter in Washington, D.C. Yeah, I think we're going to have to wind this one up, Bob.
Hasta luego, Robert. You take it easy.
You too.
All right.
427-3772 is the phone number. You're listening to Free Radio. And what are we talking about? I'm not entirely sure, but we're talking about something here. I was going through the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, and we were babbling a bit around that one. And we will be talking more with Council Member Mike Rotkin, probably the most elderly, most long-lived, and I would say most powerful of the Santa Cruz City Council. If you want to review the subject we will be talking about on Sunday at 10 o'clock, go to indybay.org, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, and it's going to be about the city council, Mayor Ryan Coonerty seizing rights, not only just denying rights for homeless people under the sleeping ban or the rights of pedestrians and even people who have their cars under his new parking lot panic law, but the rights of everybody to have items publicly accessible and discussable on city council agendas. Rotkin himself has contributed to this constriction. And rather than belabor it, I just invite you all to tune in. I mean, the big story on indybay.org/Santa Cruz, of course, is the Green Scare, and it's been in the headlines of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the controversy swirling around a supposed protest that occurred earlier in the day that involved, was it a home break-in? Was it a dispute at the door? It's hard to say what it was. And then ultimately, what is clear is that police, at least 12 squad cars and numerous police agencies surrounded a house where there were three young people in it and barricaded them in, provoking the anger of some people and I guess some concern from the neighbors about that controversy between the police and the those who are hostile to the police presence there. The point being that there seems to be a huge amount of the police to do huge reactions to what is essentially an unarmed situation or a relatively minor situation. Huge amounts of money get spent in overtime, but you don't hear Mike Rutkin shouting about cutting back the police budget. No, he wants to cut back the budget that would allow, let's say, the city council to keep better minutes. So that's now the city council staff keeps minutes only of action agenda items, not of what the public or the council members say. And you don't get to, he doesn't want the budget to include items like enforcing the Measure K law that says you can't go after people for marijuana on private property except as the lowest priority, and that this commission gets the right to look at those records. No, that would be too expensive. It's better to pay for the, you know, what is it, $20,000, $60,000 overtime at Halloween because of incidents that happened 2 years ago. You can't afford to pay for a Citizens Police Review Board. Instead, you pay half as much for a largely powerless, meaningless, and invisible police auditor, Bob Aronson. And when a city council member inadvertently mumbles something about possible racial profiling, as Tony Madrigal did a year and a half ago, you come out with a huge attack on him, and you violate the Brown Act by having the mayor have a special police cheering section that the public is excluded from any discussion on, and which isn't agendized. That was when the police demanded the resignation of Tony Madrigal in an item that was not even on the agenda as an item that the public could be aware of and come to talk about. And when and you have a similar situation. You have a whole double set of double standards where in our local community, police power is fundamentally unchecked in terms of, I suppose some police advocates would say the police don't get what they want, but I've yet to hear that argument cogently made in this community. I suppose I have to talk to some go-getter pro-police types to catch that. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. What am I going to do here? I'm going to play a little street interviewing to kind of shift our pace and our tempo a tiny bit. In fact, let's see where we're at here. I think, yeah, some street interviews from Santa Cruz would be a nice change of pace. So why don't we do that? Phone lines are open, 427-3772.
Day on the street here with
Ron.
And Ron and I are standing in front of a Palace Art Station area at about,
which I don't like at all because they 86 me for anyway.
At 12:30, and we'll hear about that 86
shop here at all
in just a moment. Actually, this came out of Noah's Bagels. It's a Tuesday morning, Tuesday's early afternoon. Tomorrow's Wednesday. And they've moved the water so that the homeless people can't drink water and run. I saw a homeless guy trying to take some food off the tables, and he was immediately approached by a manager who, of course...
This is at Noah's Bagels I'm talking about.
Said that, well, I don't know if she called the police. I think she just escorted him out, and he then blew smoke in her face. And somewhat controversial encounter, but I mean, you know, I think we have,
hungry does,
you know, feed the trash cans, not the poor, seems to be the motto at Noah's. Anyway,
never go to Noah's.
Now you say you why don't you go to not no, what why don't you have something against Noah's?
I'm 86.
Why is that?
I'm 86 from a lot of establishments in town because I speak the truth. I'll just tell them right up front, hey, you know, you're being assholes.
So do you remember the particular reason why Noah's told you?
Trippy little college girl with an attitude.
Now you just got now. You showed me your jail card.
Yeah,
your
ID cards
card.
Now.
There's an inmate, Santa Cruz County Corrections. Got your picture, your name, Norman Allen Malos. What?
Like a credit
what's
card.
This Ron stuff.
I changed
Norman.
My name. I changed my name to Ron.
Okay.
R-A-W-N.
R-A-W-N.
Who named their son Norman? Who?
Norman Bates, perhaps?
Norman Rockwell?
Norman Miller? Norman Mailer?
Norman Mailer, Norman Vizapil, Norman Rockwell.
There you go.
Norman, cheers.
Well, rather than Norman it up, beer. What's happening on the streets that you think we need to know about or in the jails? How long you were in jail recently?
I love the jail.
You do. But how long were you there?
Too long.
Yes, but how long?
About 15 days.
And what was the reason they were holding him?
I went to see my friend, and I wasn't within 100 yards of his establishment.
What was the establishment?
He lives in some horrible place. They put him on Seroquel. Now he's got diabetes. Front Street, I call it.
You've been given a restraining order not to go near there?
Over there kicking it.
And this is because of this guy who has a problem with you, or because of the establishment?
No, the manager went. He got a court order through a Judge Adams and slapped me with a 3-year no trespass restraining order within 100 yards of the place. I was less than 100 yards. They rearrested me.
And
coffee shop right across the street from there now.
And where is this again?
Front Street.
Name of the place is?
The Front Street Nut House. I don't know where it is.
It's the place near the Firefly Cafe.
Right. I was having a cup of coffee at Firefly Cafe when they busted me. They actually marched it off and said, this isn't 100 yards, 100 feet, you're going to jail.
I see. So what are the
fires? I can't be within 100 yards of the place.
Did the Firefly management
They
ban you, or do they support
no,
you?
No, they don't care.
They don't care, okay.
No, you spend money, they love it.
Now,
like everybody else around
here.
You spend money, they love
it. I just heard that the Red Church, the church that's across from the farmer's market, is allowing people to sleep in their cars in the parking lot for a dollar a car.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. Of course, only three people can do that per parking lot. Because that's the law.
Lot,
of course, the entire ISSP program has no permit that I'm aware of. Therefore, it's illegal because you can't sleep inside a church either. That's illegal under the sleeping ban. You may not know that, Ron.
I fall asleep up at the Holy Cross Church all the time.
Well, you probably fell asleep because of the sermons.
No, I know Sister Betty and Sister Barbara. They went to my ex-wife's wedding in 77. I got married here in 77. Divorced the man in 2005.
I don't want to hear all the details of your past.
Well, that's enough.
All right, anything else happening you think we should know about? Like, for example, you've been trespassing the parking garages, seeking shelter from the rain illegally.
No, I've been
in
a motel.
You've been paying a motel?
Oh, yeah.
How much did that cost?
Way too much.
How much?
$275 a week for the in-cal is a dump.
Oh, wow.
The rotten area across 7-Eleven, cops are all the time, crack deals, all kinds of shit going on. Horrible place to live. Put them by the ice machine.
What do you think
sleep in the daytime.
How about our mayor, Ryan Coonerty? Any comments, pro or con?
Weak. He's a weak mayor. I remember the mayor years ago.
Robert.
In the 80s and 90s. No, that's the mayor. This mayor's weak. He's worthless.
Well, he has... He actually has passed some rather draconian new rules at city council, and of course, removed.
I don't know where he's come from, but he's sure isn't very kind.
10 blocks of space is gone in the parking lot and parking garage.
He's a heartless mayor. He should resign.
I have to agree with you there, but then again, why wouldn't I?
That's me and you. Opinion.
Indeed, and let's hope it's everyone's opinion. If you feel like you could call the mayor and ask him to resign at 420-5020.
It's a volunteer job anyway.
We've been talking with.
Ron. R-A-W-N.
Thank you, Ron. As they say, run, Ron, run.
Is she bringing back the macaroni and cheese patty tonight?
I kind of doubt it. I don't think she's serving food anymore.
She was last week. She was out there again. Wow. Tuesday night.
Very good. Well,
I miss her mac and cheese.
May the food flow.
I'll make some, but I might put something in it. That... Anyway,
we won't talk about that. Thank you, Ron.
Yeah.
And now we are back live in the studio, and we're talking by cell phone with Yon Golder. Hey there, Yon.
Hi, how you doing, Robert?
Good. Now, you sound like you're in an up mood. I know that you've taken a lot of criticism from me for what I call arcane legal maneuvers and voluminous Public Records Act requests for the Parks and Rec Department. But apparently you had a victory today. I've talked about it already, but maybe you can reemphasize it or give it a new dimension or tell us more.
Outstanding victory and a fitting gift for my 60th birthday today. So
happy birthday to your mom, I should say. Happy birthday.
Well, that's right. That's right. She's responsible.
She did the work.
Up to a point. You talked a little bit about the case.
I have. I mentioned that Donna Dice got several tickets way back in August in the parking lot A, the lighthouse, one of the four Lighthouse Field parking lots from Chief Ranger John Wallace. and apparently had something to do with they didn't like her RVs there. One day decided to post a sign that said, RVs be gone, and restripe the whole area.
Well, yeah, and the history of it goes way back about at least three years ago, when there was quite a few, I call them nomads, people who like to live on the road, and there was a lot of people like that living in their RVs, and they spent a better part of the day at Lighthouse Field because it's one of the few places in town that's nice to hang out and doesn't cost anything to park. So it became a hangout, and there were problems from time to time with people who didn't get along or people doing minor violations and stuff like maybe littering or drinking in public or smoking a little, you know what. And the police got called there a number of times. So the City Parks and Rec apparently decided to, probably from pressure by the neighbors in the area or the surfers or somebody, to get rid of them somehow. Well, as if they couldn't use existing law to ding them for whatever they were supposedly doing wrong, they decided to just push them out of town like the white folks used to push the blacks out of the neighborhood. And they just put up signs saying, no RVs and no trailers. Well, actually, they started out earlier than that. They closed down the parking lots, and I was living out of my vehicle at the time and hanging out there, so I was there the day it happened. They closed down the parking lots and said it was for restriping and resealing the lots, but instead of just doing that, they restriped them so they were smaller and shorter, and they brought in these huge logs, and they put them right up next to where you would normally back up to the path there, so you couldn't back up to it. And then they planted trees in the path and put a bunch of rocks in there, and it basically made it impossible for a person in an RV or any kind of a larger camping vehicle to get in there. And it made it impossible to get out in and out of the back of a vehicle. So it was a calculated move, and as you recall, you and I had gone down Parks Department and asked for their file on Lighthouse Field to see whether they had any plans, whether this was something that had gone by any of the official guidelines or specifications for that kind of work,
or whether there had been a public hearing for it.
Yeah, and it turned out, of course, that they had nothing. And
not only that, they arrested you for trying to get. They hauled you away in handcuffs, as I remember.
They hauled me away in handcuffs because there was this old criminal protective order that should have gone away, and I didn't know anything about it, though I had tried to find out about it, and they used that to arrest me, though they didn't have any charges they could actually file against me, so they just let me go. They didn't charge me with anything, but it was embarrassing and got me pretty ticked off at them. And I got rid of the protective order the next day in court, but I was determined to get even with those guys at some point in time, and show just what a bunch of buffoons and administrative clowns they were. And this, when Donna Dice's case came up and you told me about it, that was the perfect opportunity because
Donna Dice is a woman who lives in her vehicle, I guess her one-time partner, Shane, who was living with her. They were a cheap support for Homies for the Homeless, the group that slept at City Hall for 6 days, yeah, attempting to get the city to pay attention to the Jones decision that allows people to sleep in their vehicles and outside unless there's another legal place for them to go. But, of course, the city has refused to do that. So they've been kind of active. I know Donna has a group called Live, Living in Vehicles Excellently, uh-huh, which is a group of vehicular residents. She started that, I think, partially because of the what she calls harassment she experienced from Ranger John Wallace in this parking lot A out at Lighthouse Field. You recall what that was involved?
Well, yeah. I told you that they did the restriping and they made all those changes and made it almost impossible to park, but they didn't have a no RV sign up there. They just had made the spaces so small and the curbs so high that you couldn't, it wasn't practical to park there, and that drove everybody away for the most part. If you want to see what it looks like, you can look on Google Earth and look at the lots out there, and you can see the way the path used to be, and you can actually see motorhomes parked out there. In fact, I think Mike Tomasi's RV is in that picture because he used to park out there then. But anyway, so later on, they posted it. I don't know. I think they posted what? Just the beginning of last August. They put signs up on every parking lot that said no RVs and no trailers. Now, you'd think that if they're posting a sign that they actually have something to back that up, that they've actually gone through a public process, they got a law against it, right? Especially when they start writing tickets. Well, I was real suspect because I've been involved with parks and parks management for about 30 years now, and I know what the policies are and the guidelines, and I've read all the general plans. And I'm aware of what the Coastal Commission says. I've just been through this stuff dozens and dozens of times. And have been to all these public hearings. So when I saw that, I thought to myself, geez, no RVs or trailers in a state beach parking lot? There's something wrong about that. Something that doesn't make any sense at all. So when you told me that Dice had had the ticket and asked me if I could help or defend it, I said, sure enough. I mean, it's something I like to do, to help people out. But I thought this might be an opportunity to find out whether these guys are trying to pull something off that they don't have authority for. And sure enough, the deeper I dug, the shakier the whole thing looked. And in this last week, I've given them a small blizzard of emails and increasingly detailed and demanding in the scope of the answers I wanted, which was all boils down to, did they have authority to do what they did?
And actually, if people want, they can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you can read. I began some of those emails seeking to get information from Parks and Rec to find out exactly what authority they were relying on to drive RVs, which is essentially housing for poor people,
right,
out of the parking lots.
Well, but it's not just housing for poor people. There's lots of very well-off people who retire and spend most of their lives riding around in RVs. It's a lifestyle. And it's not. And it's a lifestyle that actually epitomizes the freedom of America to travel and enjoy our country. And that's one of the reasons I said this cannot possibly be within state parks policy. This is something they encourage. It's actually these are the people that state parks makes their money off of, right? So I started hammering them with questions. And I went through for people who are not familiar with my history, I went through a whole lot of records request stuff with the City Parks and Recreation back in the year 2002, to the point they stonewalled me and the city tried to get an injunction against me and actually threw me in jail when I resisted, and I wound up going head to head with them in civil court, and I basically won.
Unfortunately, as I pointed out at different times, you accepted a court stipulation, the bizarrest in history, that allowed you to ask only, what was it, five questions per...
Only five questions a month, but I was...
Five questions per month.
I was guaranteed answers, and that was what was important.
You were guaranteed answers, but of course you weren't guaranteed answers, because when you were given no answers, the court provided you with no satisfaction.
Well, it's not. I didn't take it back to court, and that was my lack of pushing the issue. I could have done it, but I had other things to deal with.
If people are interested in the history of this, you can go to again Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and then search there for the name Donna Dice. And Dice is not like in the dice when you roll them, but it's like D as in David, E I S S. And there are several stories. One of them is coastal access denied to motorhomes and trailers in Santa Cruz. Another is Superintendent Hammack's stonewalls on RV ban in coastal parking lots. And this was way back in September. And suddenly here we are at the end of February, and there's been a sudden breakthrough. And what has that breakthrough been, Yon?
Well, you know, we were fighting the tickets in court, and we were at the very beginning stages filing what's called a demurrer, which is an answer before you plead that says the complaint is no good for the following reasons. And there was all kinds of problems with the complaint, the notice to appear. Didn't have a location on it. Didn't have the actual the proper sections of the law on it, and it had many defects. Okay, and so that's where we were at the very beginning stages of battling the citation, and we moved it up to Superior Court, where you actually can get a fair hearing as opposed to traffic court, where they just trample on you. Donna Dice, and we were working, I was working on a rewriting of the demurrer, and Donna called me this afternoon about a little after 5, and she was all excited. She was just bubbling over. She says, John, they got 3 different kinds of rangers out here, and they're painting out the signs. They actually had, and I'm not quite sure what yet she was talking about, but I think they had state park rangers and city rangers and maybe the cops, I don't know who. They were all out there, and they're painting over the signs and getting rid of them. And I'll tell you, you know, that was just a. I had sent all these emails telling Danette Shoemaker and Steve Hammack, and sending copies to the city attorney and copies to the city council and city manager Dick Wilson, that you guys, I got a real problem here, because it's not just the fact that you didn't have authority to put these signs there. You're supposed to go through the whole public process that you go through for any law or ordinance, but it is completely against Coastal Commission policy and state parks policy, and so you've got no business doing this.
What's really,
so what you're doing out there, you're doing unlawful arrests.
What's
the
interesting
person, in this case, a person breaking the law was John Wallace, not Donna Dice.
So it's interesting that it's okay if city officials with official uniforms and little offices and motor vehicles that the city pays them to drive around with can run around and harass poor and homeless people on city funding. And Donna Dice is, even though, you know, she gets a stipend from the government, she is poor compared to the situation for most people in Santa Cruz. And people who are in the Poganip every night, who have no legal place to go, and so go up there and sleep under their tents, are they told, well, you have to clean up your campsite, and we're working on, you know, some kind of tidy campers program where people, you know, are required to keep their campsites clean? No, they're just told, we're going to come through, we're going to destroy your property, you'll have no legal place to sleep, and we're not even going to store what we take from you, which is required by state law, and which in Fresno has become the basis for a significant federal court injunction against the police there, and also a lawsuit that will result in a significant amount of money going to homeless people. Of course, we're looking into a similar lawsuit here in Santa Cruz. So we're funding government thugs who are arrogantly running around thinking that because they know what's best for everybody else, they can particularly lord it over poor people.
What you're doing is we're paying as taxpayers, and they passed a special tax, what, a year ago to fund parks and recreation as well as police and general.
$750,000 went to parks and rec.
$750,000. That's right.
And $250,000 of that was for more cops and more parks and recreation rangers to engage in the kind of abusive behavior that Wallace was himself doing individually, and doing actually at a greater pace than the Santa Cruz Police Department. Year before last, in 2006, he issued more tickets for camping in a 6-month period than the entire police department did.
Well, he's earning his salary.
He's a very zealous fellow. There's no question about it. But,
point is, we're paying these people who have sworn, have taken an oath to uphold the law. We're paying them to unlawfully arrest and cite people. That's what was going on here. So I pulled the covers off of it to the point where they actually realized that we're going to get in deep doo-doo if we keep this up. And apparently they saw the light sometime this afternoon or earlier on. It'll be interesting because I'm going to ask for all the correspondence between departments to find out who finally saw the light. My guess, it had something to do between the city attorney, some city council people, and maybe somebody from State Parks, because I had State Parks General Counsel involved in this, and they were in touch with me, and I was sending them copies of these emails, too.
You will also be in the studio on Sunday to have a dialogue with our own very favorite council member, Michael Rutkin.
Yeah, we're going to see if we can get Mike Rutkin to eat a little crow pie on this one, too.
Well, I'm sure he will smile at you beatifically and proceed.
Hey, we took care of it, John, didn't we? Didn't we do the right thing? Well,
there you go.
You sure as hell wouldn't have if we hadn't stood up and jumped up and down and screamed.
John,
I mean,
go ahead.
We've got in writing, you know, Danette's and Steve Hammock's and Wallace's responses, you know, how right they thought they were, and yet they never quoted a law or anything. I mean,
We've only got about 7 minutes left. What I'm going to try to do is get a hold of Donna before the show's over.
All right.
Give her a chance to say a word and hope to hear from you again on Sunday.
Well, my last word for this is just because you see a sign or somebody tells you you can't do something, take it with a grain of salt and make them show it to you in writing, because that's all this about it, too, is the fact that they didn't really have authority to do what they did.
Thank you, Jan.
So challenge authority there.
All right.
All right.
And good work, Jan.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Giving her a call now.
Hello, leave me a message. 326-5684. Thanks.
To leave a voice message, press 1, or just wait for the tone. To send a numeric page, press 2 now. At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound.
Boy, it goes on forever, doesn't it? Hey, Donna, this is Robert calling from Free Radio. Congratulations. And please call in on Sunday morning to give us a fuller account of what went down, 427-3772, or leave me a message at 423-4833, and I'll pass on the word to the community. And, that, of course, if people want to get in touch with you, they can at 325-5684, and with your organization Live, Living in Vehicles Excellently. So we're reaching the last 5 minutes of the show, which means that very shortly, Uncle Dennis should be showing up to do his own show, From the Cream to the Dregs, assuming that things are all working well for him, and it looks like they probably will be. I'm going to prepare that. And a couple of items before I leave. I invite people to come to the Human Rights Organization on Saturday. We're going to have a real update on the sleeping ban lawsuit, which looks like it's finally beginning to move off dead center, with another attorney signing on to the lawsuit and several attorneys from Washington weighing in by phone. So that's pretty interesting. And I invite you to check that out at the Firefly Cafe, 131 Front Street, 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. That's the Human Rights Organization. If you're listening to the radio today, you note that Matt Gonzalez joined the Ralph Nader ticket in the presidential race. I have not yet gotten any clear statements from Nader and Gonzalez on their position on laws that criminalize the homeless. When Nader came through town in 2000, he was mighty shifty on the whole issue, I think concerned about his credentials with Green Party member Tim Fitzmaurice, who is, of course, abandoned the Green Party platform supporting civil rights for the homeless here in Santa Cruz, unfortunately, but there you are. I was going to... Dennis is in the studio, and we'll use a little of my time to give his opinion. Go ahead, Dennis.
It's just the biggest problem with the Green Party right now is that it's been accused of being a party of white males.
Now, those white males are questionable. I have to agree.
Well, one of the most interesting candidacies that the Green Party has ever proposed in the last few years is that of Cynthia McKinney, congressperson from, I believe it's South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Former congressperson. Former congressperson. But, my personal opinion as a Green would be that she would be a great candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was one of the few congresspeople who actually came to a Huff event, and she was supportive of the protest against Mayor Kennedy back in 2004 and the so-called One Dance Summit that hit the Hill in January of that year.
Well, the great thing about Cynthia is you don't have to choose between a woman and a person of color.
Which is irrelevant. Anyway, the question is, how do they stand on the issues, folks? Don't be misled by superficialities, however traditionally record-breaking or tradition-breaking they are. I'm going to be talking on Sunday about, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman talked about today, which is the position of the major party candidates on the war, which is, of course, horseshit, and has nothing to do with getting out of Iraq and everything to do with getting elected. What we want to do, of course, is get out of Iraq, so my suggestion is that people spend very little time on the election and lots of time on issues like Green Scare, getting out of Iraq, restoring community control of police and community control of politics, and listening to some darn good music. Uncle Dennis is in charge of that. He's coming on right now. And thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Hopefully we'll be together, meet together again on Sunday morning. See you then.
Thank you. And we will leave the Blue Oyster Cult right there. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. And you're tuned into a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. Well, tonight we're going to be doing a little studio maintenance along with the music, and you may notice that we will be off the air for a few moments at a time here and there. Hopefully I will have this all taken care of rather quickly, and we can all get back on part of our continuing effort to make this station as robust as we can. There's still a few weeks of winter left, for those of you who think it's all over. Actually, we have an extra day before winter this year, tomorrow being a leap day, a day that we only get once every 4 years, February 29th. So I hope you all enjoy that, especially you folks who have your birthday on leap day. Happy birthday to you. You only get to say it once every 4 years, so hope you enjoy that. Anyway, don't be surprised if we're off the air once in a while in the next 20 minutes or so. In the meantime, let's listen to some live Iron Butterfly. I'm sure you'll recognize the tune.